What does it really take to lead one of the major gyms in the United States? How can you go from an entry-level, fresh out of college graduate to a big-time CEO? What is it like to actually lead that many people? In this episode, I sit down with someone who's been through it all, leading and working with hundreds of others. We'll talk about how to grow your network and how to approach your current position. Plus, what's the true key to success when leading a team? Keep listening to find out. Let's get started.
Welcome to Business Isn't Hard.
Today's guest is Carl Sanft,
President and CEO of 24 Hour Fitness, a leader known for his authentic style, operational excellence, and passion for people. Carl's journey started on the sales floor, managing stores at Kmart and Office Depot, before moving into a 20-year career at Best Buy, where he eventually became the Senior Vice President of U.S. Retail Operations. There, he led large-scale teams and helped drive major growth through strong leadership and a focus on execution. In 2019, he joined 24 Hour Fitness as Chief Operating Officer, and in 2022, he was named CEO. Since then, Carl has been on a mission to help people live healthier, happier lives, bringing the same energy to the gym visits and team meetings as he does to boardrooms. He's a leader who believes in staying close to the work and close to the people. And today, we're digging into what's fueled his success and how he leads with purpose every day. Carl, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for the introduction. It's humbling. I appreciate it.
You've done so much. I'd love to kind of get into your story and how you got here today. Can you tell us a little bit how you've, you know, gotten to 24 Hour Fitness?
Sure. I'll try not to be verbose. You know, I went to Arizona State, as you know. I got to meet you there, which was inspiring. And, you know, I was actually recruited straight off of campus. And, you know, it's one of the reasons that I, you know, spend time back with the university is because, you know, I was that student. You know, I was getting ready to graduate. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I met some people that gave me some ideas. So I'm thankful for that. You know, that led to a 30-year career in retail, which I thought you recapped, you know, really well. At the tail end of my career with Best Buy, I was actually commuting to Minnesota, leaving every Sunday night, coming back every Thursday night. Oh, wow. And, you know, it wasn't hard for, you know, the phone call to come in that said, hey, how'd you like to work for Southern California-based 24 Hour Fitness, where I live, a gym that I'd been a part of. I actually joined 24 Hour Fitness in 1993. So I've been a member, you know, for over 30 years. And so I was like, you know, hell yeah, love the brand, inspired to get started with it, and, you know, just excited to go. So that's what got me started with the company.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it took you, I mean, decades to get there in the first place. And now I'm sure you love what you're doing.
Yeah. It's
great. Do you have any tips or tricks or anything? Like, how did you go about really finding like that thing you love to do? And how did you end up here, you know, years and years later?
Yeah, you know, careers are interesting, you know, because you can look at them at the beginning and you can think of all that you have to do, and you can look at them, you know, near the end, and I'm 55, so I won't be working that much longer. And you can kind of look back, and I think you can make mistakes if you try to kind of take the same steps that somebody else took. It certainly wasn't always purposeful. It wasn't always linear. So you really just kind of have to think about, you know, what did the journey provide along the way that helps you, you know, learn, that helps you get better, that helps you, you know, learn from your mistakes. And then, you know, think about the leader that you want to be, great leaders that you worked for, not so great leaders that you worked for, et cetera. So I think, you know, I had 30 years of cultivating a point of view in retail about the type of leader that I wanted to be if I was fortunate enough to run a company. And I got lucky because not only did I get to run a company, but I got to run a company that I love and an industry that I love. So that was really, you know, the trifecta.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, it all worked out for you. Did you always know you wanted to be a leader? Like, was that always something in the back of your head, or?
I don't know that I would have said it that way. I think what I wanted to do is probably where you are and a lot of people are, is I wanted to be rewarded for my education. I wanted to, you know, make going to college for 4 years worth something. You know, those were some of the things that were on my mind. I remember my college recruiting interview like it was yesterday, because I was so unpolished and I was so unprofessional. And I just said, like, look, like, I know, you know, that, I can add value to a company. I know that, I can do that strategically and from a leadership standpoint, but I can't sit all day. I'm 22 years old. I'm filled with energy. I can't sit behind a desk all day. And they're like, thinking, movement, retail. I think whatever I said, the answer would have been retail. He's a retail recruiter. But what retail really got me to do was it got me to, get out there right away leading people. And, I think if you met the first people that I led when I was, 22, and then the first, the last people that I've led when I'm 55 is an entirely different leadership style.
I'm sure.
But you evolve over the years. You learn a lot over the years.
Yeah. Is there any, I mean, you really worked your way up too, especially at Best Buy.
Yeah.
How were you able to like demonstrate that? I mean, you obviously have to
Yeah.
show others that you're working hard. You have to work hard. You have to do the right things. How
Best
did you do
Buy,
it?
especially in the early years, was super cool because if you actually, won and you won with integrity, then, you could differentiate yourself. So it was a company then which was, results and values first, and then we'll evaluate and make sure that you've got the soft skills to be successful. So you could stand out. You know, there's all kinds of
Okay.
contests and events and things like that that allowed you to stand out. It wasn't, politics and bureaucracy and then results after that. So in that moment, kind of that generation, if you will, it was really a great company where you could differentiate yourself, and then leaders were interested in you. I remember, the guy, one of the CEOs we had, Brian. I met him in the gym.
Okay.
Ironically, and he just, asked who I was, asked why I thought I won stuff, asked what I wanted to do, in between sets. It was authentic as, any conversation you could ever imagine. But that's the company that it was when we grew up in it. It was pretty fantastic.
That's really cool. Is there, I mean, you obviously won a lot. As far as your role, a CEO before that, really doing, executing a lot, right? Bringing up those numbers, winning a lot. Are there any, what, like,
Yeah.
how did you do that? I mean, that maybe is a little bit different from leading. Is it, or is it,
Yeah.
what
Yeah,
does that
no,
look
it
like?
is. I think that, if you know, I've been through a lot. I've been
Yeah.
through executive coaches, I've been through executive assessments. Heck, I even got a Wordle somewhere about my leadership, and what comes up when people do like a 360 look at my leadership. And it's all about authenticity. It's all about clarity. It's about predictability. I think those are things that people look for in leaders. They don't look for nonsense. Like, there's these moments in your career, pivotal moments that matter. Am I going to get the job? Am I not going to get the job? Am I going to get the raise? Am I not going to get the raise? Am I going to have a great review? Am I going to have a bad review? Those are the moments. But the question is do your daily activities actually meet those moments? And, does it all reconcile? Or is it like you're sitting there in your review and you're like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, we've never had this conversation. And what do you mean I'm not going to get this job or this opportunity, et cetera? So I think what's critical is that you provide, authentic, honest relationships and authentic and honest communication so that, people know where they stand. I
Yeah.
always say that when you meet me, I'm a B minus, and then I get better. And the reason I'm a B minus is because I don't try to woo people. I don't try to, dazzle you with my vocabulary. I meet people where they are. I, do my best to share with them where I think we are, and then I reward people that help us move forward. And I'm very clear about it. And people enjoy that. I think at first they're a little taken aback by, how candid and direct I am. But over time they're like, they actually find, safety and predictability in that, because, like, I don't have to worry about it because Carl's upset, he'd tell me. Or if Carl didn't think I was doing well, he would tell me. And that gives people a lot of room to move. I'm not the boss that'll smile at you every day and then go talk behind your back in the next office. There's too many people like that. It's just not who I am.
Yeah, no, I really like that. It makes people feel, secure in what they're doing and kind of understood, I think. And going back, like throughout your career, obviously you've done a lot right, and including that. Have you ever done anything wrong? Like, have you ever messed up? I'm
Definitely.
curious.
Totally. I mean, first of all, I had no reason. I mean, no right leading people at 22. I mean, that was ridiculous. I'd done some, jobs when I was growing up through school and everything, but I never led people. Going from, how did I do on finals to being a manager? I mean, that's a heck of a
That's a
transition. And
big step.
yeah, it's a big step. And I still remember, the first decisions I made, and they were straight out of the textbook. And I just had no, tactical experience to be able to apply to it. So I think my first years were stoic, and they were rehearsed, they were without feeling. And those aren't my favorite years. I think that as I moved up through my career, especially as fast as I progressed, I really, focused on kind of a linear path. I became, a district manager. I wanted to be a regional vice president to a senior vice president. Like, I was on a mission, but a mission to where? Where am I going? Up, I see, but in service of what? And it took me a bit of time in my career to really get clear about what I was in service of, what I stood for, what are the things that I would do? What are the things that I wouldn't do? When would I say no? When would I actually say, like, if that's the way you want to lead this company, that's not something that I'm interested in participating in. And not because I'm independently wealthy, but because it actually doesn't fit my mission and purpose, So I think one of the things that, I've done, did wrong was, I was so focused on a linear path, I think I missed some of the context along the way. And, if I offered anybody advice, I'd say, maybe pick that context up at an earlier age.
Yeah, I'm sure it takes, I mean, it obviously takes a while to really understand and learn what you're passionate about, where you kind of fit into everything. Is there any way to accelerate that learning? Or is it just a really just a trial and error thing?
Well, some of it is, just life. I call it, a full life. If you talk to any of my executive team, they're like, Carl says it all the time. And what I mean by that is that, a life partner, whether you have kids, whether you have, extended family, like, there's a lot that goes into your day that isn't just work. And understanding that is difficult when you're 25, 28, and you're just, all you do is work, right? And people around you have, so much more of a complement of things that they're thinking about outside of it. Now I'm married, I've got three daughters that, range in age, from 20 to 11, and the day could be filled with just about anything, personally, never mind, professionally. So understanding the fullness of people's lives is something that I think, you could almost spend, time on. Where is it, time to kind of press, and where is it time to lean off, and how do you think of, when the business comes first, and how do you think of when family comes first? Those are things that, took, decades, candidly, to really kind of get my head around. I think that those are things that, I would offer as, things to think about, which you don't really pick up in the book. You pick up in the book, this is the business, and this is Acme Company, and this is the SWOT analysis, and here we go. But there's just so much more to it than that. And I think one of the key things that I learned around the way is that, as a leader, you don't have as much power as you think you have, and, I'm a CEO of, an $850 million company, and I don't have a lot of power. And, you might be thinking, like, what do you mean you're the boss? The truth of the matter is that there's this level of performance, I'll just call it compliance, that, if people don't achieve, you can fire them, right? Like, and they get it, like, hey, you didn't do it, you were supposed to do it, you're fired. That compliance level is like C-level performance. You want your performance for your company to be like A-level performance, so just call that like committed, right? And you can't hold people accountable to be the best, right? Like, because at one point, Oliver's kind of like, I'm kind of sick of you telling me to do more, and I've done everything that my job says, and I don't want you to push me any further. You might not say it aloud, but you can feel it inside. And then ultimately, where you get and what you realize is that if you want people to go from compliance to committed, it's actually based on their discretion. So it's known as discretionary effort, which means it's totally their choice, which means you have no power as a leader. So the only thing you can do is engage and inspire a workforce to be able to, provide discretionary effort because they see what's in it for them. You get what's in it for you, all of your constituents, whether it's customers, members, investors, et cetera. But it's all about driving engagement. And it can't be like happy, nonsensical engagement, like, pizza on Friday and tacos on Tuesday. Maybe that's part of it. But ultimately, it has to
I'll
be the
take
kind
it.
of engagement where people are like, you know what? I actually think my leader cares about me. I think they know me. They're interested in me and they want to see me develop, and the more that you see those type, artifacts that prove that to be true, the more you're willing to give discretionary effort. So I don't know, you spend your whole life wanting to be the boss. You think you're going to be in charge and you realize you're not in charge at all. It's really all about whether people want to deliver levels of success or they don't.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, that is a huge thing, right? Discretionary effort. And it makes a lot of sense. I think the next logical question is how do you do it? And I think it'd be interesting if we framed it kind of maybe going back to, early Carl or early graduate who has just started their managing career, right? If we put ourselves in those shoes, how could a young graduate or somebody who's really new to managing really drive that discretionary effort and get the best out of their team?
Well, I didn't think of it then. Maybe it's a terrible answer, but I mean, it's an authentic one. Yeah, I didn't think like that. When I was a brand new manager, I thought it was all about productivity. And I thought the way that you were going to, succeed and have people be productive is you were going to follow up. So I was a pain in the neck. I mean, I was like, here's the list. Is the list done? Here's the new list. And, I was the one that was just driving productivity. I don't think I like overtly was a jerk or anything. I was personable enough. But I actually thought I was in charge, and I actually thought like, this is about, these things being done. And if I get these things done predictably, then I'll be rewarded, et cetera, et cetera. But what I didn't really have my head around was, ways of engaging the team, outside of, what I would call state issued, nonsense, like employee of the month and things of that nature. But it was all given to you. It's not like you thought of it, but I wasn't really the one that was, thinking about engagement the way that I do today. And the way that I do it today is, through very, authentic, one-on-one relationships where I know what each person is trying to accomplish and they know what we're trying to accomplish. And I'm not my best version of myself every single day. I still have bad days as a leader where I'm like, I was kind of a jerk today. But for the most part, if you can, be who you want to be more predictably than not, then people will give you a little bit of room on your bad days.
So if you had to maybe go back, or even just if you had to give advice to someone who's in that position in like an early managerial role, is that the advice you'd give? Maybe just
Yeah, I
try to
mean, it's
understand where
tough. I
your
do it
people
all
are.
the time, and it's things that people, don't want to hear, right? Which is like, slow down, right? Like, you're gonna get there. You're gonna get promoted, right? And so like just like let's bet that all those things are going to happen, but then let's make sure that when you get there, you're the best version of yourself and you're ready and you're successful. But being successful in the role and getting the role are two different things entirely, right? So, what I found at least in my career is that if I tell people, predictably it's going to happen, but let's take time and get prepared. That kind of calms them down a little bit and helps them think about it.
That's really interesting. So, I mean, was that a mindset you've always had, or just in general, is that a mindset you recommend? Like, assuming that you'll get there, right?
I
Just
didn't
not
have
taking
it
it for
then.
granted,
I
but.
was, I mean, at a certain, point in my career, I understood it, but like not right out of school. It took time. But the problem is if you look at, I'm a huge math guy. I love math. And if you look at math and you say, how long are people in roles? right? And then you can see the churn that exists. And then you say, well, what side of that churn do you want to be on? And how can you be, as successful as you want to be? And then how can you achieve what it is that you want to achieve? I mean, those are some of the things that can make you think about it. I mean, arguably, especially with, your career, or pardon me, your education, graduating, et cetera, like good things are going to happen, maybe not as fast as you want, not exactly what you want, but it's more of a lattice than a ladder. And it's trajectory more than it is anything else, then yeah, you're going to get there. I mean, all companies, are going to hire, right? Maybe not in the moment, maybe not in the geography. That's another piece of advice I'd give, is like, I mean, I lived in places, man, that like I didn't want to live, and I, but I took the jobs that I had to take to, get to where I needed to be. So kind of some level of grace along the way in the journey is probably another thing to think about as well.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure moving or flying to Minnesota every week wasn't necessarily the most
Yeah, I mean,
ideal
that was
situation.
that, that was kind of like, I mean, my 14th year through my 20th year.
Yeah.
So, but at the time I couldn't move from California.
Uh-huh.
It was pretty cool that the company was willing to let me travel or commute. And but it was taxing, right? Taxing on them, taxing on me, I think both ways.
I'm sure, yeah. Is there, I mean, I know you switched companies a few times, obviously. Maybe that was part of it. As far as like it kind of going into that trajectory, right? How do you distinguish maybe staying at a company being like, well, maybe there's opportunity here
Yeah.
versus switching companies, right? Those are two very
Great
different
question.
options.
It's a really insightful question. I think that companies should work, well, people should work for companies and companies should work for you, right? And it's just another form of a relationship.
Yeah.
And part of the calculus is this relationship still working for me? I.e., should I still work here, right? And am I, feeling as though I'm getting out of it what I want to get out of it? I'm sure they're certainly doing the same calculus. Like, are they getting out of the relationship what they want to get out of the relationship? But it's funny, at one point with a lot of people, the companies are doing the assessment, but people forget to do the assessment. It's just inertia. But I think, you just got to decide. And I had a fabulous career at Best Buy. But I was a senior vice president for well, how long must it have been? I guess it must have been, 8 years.
Wow.
And I just felt like, boy, longer than that. What am I kidding? 11 years.
Oh,
And
wow.
so, it just got to the point for me where, it was time, to do something else. And I think, good for them too, because, people got to move up when I moved out. So I think that's successful as well.
Yeah, no, I get that. I want to move to a lightning round, but I have a quick question on something you said earlier. And it was that you didn't want to sit behind a desk right after school. Is that, I mean, I think a lot of people, especially in business, that's like the kind of the typical path. Is that, I mean, how do, is that
Well, I don't
something
know.
like
I
you
mean, it
really
was just
want?
me, I mean, I would, and I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way, like, I mean, the world's different now too with, Zoom and Teams and, hybrid and, things of that nature. But, I just felt like I had too much energy to, sit in a cube somewhere and, do whatever I need to do. I needed to engage with people. I needed to, get out and talk to people. I still hate email and, I get bored in corporate meetings. I'm the one that like stands up in the middle of the meeting and walks to the back of the room and stands up in the meeting because it's just, I just don't sit well. And I get anxious, so I knew I needed to do something active. And still today, every chance I have, I'm in a club, talking to people, talking to members, talking to team members. I don't want to be, on in an office all day. It's just not built that way.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Something that really stuck out to me that I still remember from the first time we met was how you interview, and that's just by taking people out to, do whatever, but like drive around, et cetera, instead of office, which I thought was I think is really cool, and that's a great way to, interview.
Taking people, you know, because people are practiced, right? I mean, people rehearse, you know. I mean, you can train to interview, you know, and you can give the perfect answer to the predictable questions. And I can't sit around and try and think of the most, innovative question to try to get, people to show their authentic selves. So if I can get you moving and I can go, through a parking lot, to a restaurant, I can get you interacting with people that you didn't expect to interact with, I'm going to learn something about you along the way. I guess the short version is I try to take the candidate off their game. And if I can take their off their game, I'll figure it out.
I love that. Yeah, I'm sure you learn a lot about them. And speaking
Yeah.
of learning, I would like to get into a little bit of a lightning round.
Sure.
First question here is, what is
Yeah.
your favorite business book or podcast?
Oh, wow. Favorite business book or podcast? One book that I talk about a lot is a book called The 10 Lenses. I like that book. Because in essence, what it does is it tells you all the different angles by which someone can look at the same thing. And so it's not right or wrong. It has a lot to do with life experience. It has a lot to do with, upbringing, it has perspective. Those are things that I like a lot. My wife is from Thailand. I live in a multicultural home, and that gives me, such a, different perspective on life. Because things we, grew up with and we take for granted, I'm answering the questions of why they are the way they are. I think it's a wonderful way of looking.
That's awesome. Yeah, it really ties into leadership style too, I
Yeah.
think. What is your biggest pet peeve in business?
I can't stand people being late. I mean, even on the, every meeting I'm 5 minutes early.
I
I
noticed, yeah.
yeah, I'm early everywhere I go. My grandfather said, if a job's not worth getting to 5 minutes early, it's not worth going to at all. And it stuck with me. So I've tried to kind of take it down a notch on people being late and not kind of overreacting, but it's always the thing that's just driven me crazy.
Interesting. Yeah, no, it makes a lot
Yeah.
of sense. What is your best networking tip?
Yeah, this is a big one for me. It's actually twofold. It's,
Okay.
because organizations back to kind of this linear path that people are on. One is, and you learn it in school, but then you're like, whatever, I don't even know what that means. And then you get to the workplace and you're like, ah, that's it. Is, make like a networking tree, So, look at your boss and actually draw out everything, from her left to right, so all of her peers along the way, and then you try and build relationships, kind of outside of the vertical that you're in, and then the second piece is try and build relationships one level above your boss, and there's two reasons for that. One is it'll give you a more robust kind of daily point of view, right? Like everything isn't filtered through one person. You can kind of hear the company message come down. You can get it in, different bites. The other thing is it changes a lot in big companies. 1 minute you're running, America, next minute you're running China, the next minute, 1 minute you're running, like merchant, the next minute you're running retail. You never know what you're going to do. You can't walk by somebody for 4 years and then bam, they're your boss, and then say, hi, I want to meet you. It actually happened to me, which was, one of my boss's peers became my boss when they changed it. And the first thing he said to me is, I'm excited to work with you. We've had a relationship. You're really one of the only people that talked to me that didn't have to. It proves my point, right? Like you got to build kind of a wider horizontal path. And then one above your boss is important to me because, and it doesn't have to be like a thick line relationship, but they need to have context. And the reason they have to have context is because you can have bad bosses, if I'm your boss and I'm a bad boss, right? And I walk into, the room that you're not in and I say, Oliver's a bad person, it'd be nice if the person I was talking to had enough context to go, I don't know if that's true. Like I actually know Oliver, or I know him well enough that I can actually ask him or I can talk to him. So it's a bit protectionism just to like build your network wide and build it tall so that you can define yourself. It's important to me, like me or hate me, you know, want me on your team or, you know, don't want me on your team, want me to lead your company, don't want me to lead your company. Have it be based on your experiences with me, not have it be based on what people said about me. It's really important to me.
Yeah, I really like that. And we'll do a little quick follow-up question here. How is there, do you have any like easy ways to start those relationships? Did you just do it by
Yeah,
saying
I
hi in
would
the
just draw it
hallways
out
or
first of all. I literally
okay.
draw it
So
out
draw
and
it out.
then grab a peer. I've taught this all through my career. Grab a peer and then say, like, you know, it's got to be somebody that you can trust and somebody you can be a bit vulnerable with. And then say, like, this is what my networking wheel looks like. What's yours look like? And then hopefully, if you put them together, you can kind of cover each other's blind spots, right? So you'd be like, well, I don't really know anybody in finance. Do you know someone in finance? Well, yeah, I do. Well, could you introduce me to that person? Or like, could you have me tag along in a meeting with that person? So that's the way to kind of build it out in a, you know, informal way, but a purposeful way.
Okay, yeah, I really like that advice. We've talked about this a lot, but what is a skill that every leader should have?
Look, I mean, there's lots of them that are like state issued, like, you know, they got to listen, and you're going to have people say you should talk less, you should listen more, and, you know, empathy and all those things, et cetera. But I think if I had to pick one, it would be stay curious. And what curious means to me is, you know, the further and further you get into your career, the more and more you think you know the answer. Ah, you know, this person's like that person, and this idea is like that idea, and this problem's like that problem. If you can stay curious, then you tend to ask more questions, and not lead with the solution, and people will appreciate you more. So if you just, like, to my point, take a breath and say, well, how did we get here? And what are you trying to accomplish? And how can I help? Then, you know, people will be more willing to kind of share with you where they're at, what they're doing, and how they're going to get there.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important to not jump to assumptions too.
Yeah, it's tough, but it's one to keep in mind.
Okay. Last question of the lightning round. What is your go-to method for handling stress?
This has to be true. It sounds like it's so cliche, but it's how I ended up in this job. The best hour of my day, the only hour of my day where, you know, I mean, think about it, you know, I'm a husband, you know, I'm a community member, you know, I'm a parent, you know, I have so many, you know, I'm a CEO, you know, I have so many roles that I'm responsible for, you know, son, you know, like brother, et cetera. The only hour of my day that I get for me and only me is when I'm in the gym. And I put my headphones on and I listen to music that, you know, I won't tell people that what I listen to. It's hard, it's loud, and it's fast. And it de-stresses me, you know. So it's not about, you know, looking like I'm out of Greek mythology, but I'm telling you, it does an amazing job of just keeping me centered, you know, getting my mentality right. I feel like, better physically, better mentally, and it gives me energy throughout the day.
Yeah, no, as an athletic person, as someone who loves sports, I could definitely relate.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Carl, for being on. I want to end with one final question about your
Sure.
career through everything you've done. What has been at the core of it, the key to your success as a leader?
Yeah, I think, you know, the fuller my life has been, and the happier that I've been personally, the better I've shown up professionally. You know, so if I could offer anybody any advice, it would be, live a full life, you know, be happy, whatever that is for you. And you know, just inherently you'll be the best leader that you want to be. You know, there's no way that you can kind of be, you know, the opposite. I've never seen a leader that the only thing they had was work and they showed up the way they wanted to or the way they wanted to be led. It's almost a fact, a quick cheat sheet. Doesn't mean everybody has to be married, doesn't mean everybody has to have kids, but if you're fulfilled personally, you're going to show up in an incredible way professionally.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. Well, thank you so much, Carl, for being on. This is
Bet.
an amazing conversation.
Keep me in the loop on your journey, and I would buy Oliver stock. I think you're gonna do great. I'm in. I'm a fan.
Appreciate it. Thank
All
you.
right. Take care.
That was Carl Sampt, CEO of 24 Hour Fitness. Obviously, as a CEO, Carl is extremely leadership focused. Ever since he graduated, he's been in some type of management role. Carl, like so many other fresh graduates, was extremely focused on efficiency and getting things done when he was first appointed a manager at 22. Looking back, he mentioned that he wished he could have been more patient and noticed the context. Stop to think about what's going on around you. The years go fast, and learning in the beginning is a lot easier and less riskier than learning when you have major responsibilities. Carl recommends sitting back and not being impatient. His advice is to bet things will happen. You will get promoted. You will get that next job. But for now, focus on being the best version of yourself for when that happens. You don't need to rush it. You want to be ready. And remember, when you're thinking about those next steps, remember that it's a career lattice, not ladder. You have so many different paths and options. Don't lock yourself into one specific journey. You don't have to follow someone else's steps. Create your own way. And once you finally get there, Carl's learned that you don't have as much power as you might think. You can get someone to do compliance level work, but if you want them to do A-plus stuff, to be committed, to put in that discretionary effort, you have to motivate them. It's hard, but if you're able to do it, that's what separates a good leader from a great one. Thanks for listening. This week, I encourage you to actually draw out, yes, physically draw out, a chart of everyone you know in your organization. If you don't have a job, draw out whatever institution you're a part of, like your school. Then, try and fill in the gaps. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, keep building something great. Thanks for tuning in.